I don't think I ever mentioned it to you all. And they had made a trip up to England. And you remember I asked the church for permission to send some of those books over there to some of them that would request them. Well, there was a couple in England that requested one of those books. I sent it to them. And while these two Jews were up there, this was a Jewish woman. She showed it to these two Jewish evangelical Christians. They both have doctors in theology. And they were so impressed with that book, they sent me an email and said that they had wanted to understand all the different things that are supposed to transpire in the Bible, and that they were both literal interpreters, and that they had always had great difficulty in understanding the splitting of the Mount of Olives, the planet, how the wormwood would come down, how the green grass would be burned up, how you would have the water turn red. And what they were especially interested in was what I had written about Israel and the transformational changes that would occur in Israel that would make it the breadbasket of the world. So they sent me this email and asked for official permission to use my... So I gave them complete academic freedom and a release to use any part or all of my book. And they did. As a matter of fact, they just about copied. Their book is a huge book, about like this. They just finished a book. It's a huge thing and about like this. But probably a third of it is taken directly from my book. They use my diagrams. Of course, they tell people it's me. But they're Jews. They believe in security of the believer. They're saved. And they believe in security of the believer. And they believe that Israel is going to be changed by God and not by thermonuclear weaponry. And they have never believed that man would destroy himself, but that the God of Israel would do it. So they sent me a copy of that book the other day. Lord, it's a huge thing. He gave it to me. And I just thought I'd let you all know that what you all are watching here on this on Wednesday night, I've sent books all over the world. And the book has been published in Lithuania and distributed all over the Soviet Union and northern parts of Europe. And now these two Jews down in South Africa are distributing their book all over Africa and even up in Israel. So apparently it's having a pretty good effect worldwide, and that gives me a lot of personal satisfaction. Not that I think I've done anything, but that people are getting to hear this information, and when this all starts, I think it'll help them a lot. We started off in Revelation 8, 7 through 12, and we went all the way through the first angel sounding, and the hail and the fire mingled with the blood, and the third part of trees burn up, and all the green grass burn up. Then we went through verse 8, the second angel sound, as it were, a great mountain burning with fire was cast into the sea. Third part of the sea became blood, and the third part of the creatures were from the sea and had life, died. We covered all that in the last couple of Sundays. And then the third part of the ships were destroyed. And I really forgot the kicker last Wednesday night. I didn't tell you. I finally had to validate what I believed. It said a third part of the ships were destroyed. And I did a lot of research, but quite frankly, I could not get the data, sufficient data, to really make an absolute positive case. So then it dawned on me, Lloyd's of London actually insures most of the world's shipping. So I sent them a long letter, and they sent me back a cable. And they said, Mr. McNamara, your conclusions are correct. According to our computer records, at any given time, one-third of the world's shipping is in port, and two-thirds are engaged in commerce on the open sea. I still have the cablegram. Well, the one-third that are going to be destroyed are the one-third that are in port, because they'll be destroyed by tsunami waves. But tsunami waves out on the open sea, they don't affect shipping out on the open sea, only in port. Now, the thing about all this, as we go through it, and by the time I'm finished with these trumpets, the reason I know this has to be true is because it is all perfectly consistent with the way God made the atmosphere and the exact things that are supposed to happen as each one of these events occurs. Eventually, you see it producing what's in the next thing. And you'll see that by the time we get to the seventh trumpet. And a third angel sounded. Now you've got the green grass burning. You've got the trees burning. You've got volcanic eruptions in the midst of the sea. You've got the production of dinoflagellates and the process of oxidation turning the water blood red. You've got the aquatic life smothering. And all these things are produced by God. And only God can produce them, but he has all the ingredients and the construction of the earth the way he made it to do it. Now he's going to bring something from outside the earth's atmosphere, from space. And a third angel sounded, and there fell a great star from heaven. Now, the word that is used there is a stare. So it has to be one of two things. I'm a literal interpreter. It either has to be a shooting star, or a comet, or a real star, like Polaris, the North Star, which is hundreds of thousands of light years away. It's got to be one of those three. So I'll be talking about which one it has to be as I continue, based on the description that God's Holy Spirit gives through John as to its characteristics. Burning as it were a lamp. This thing produces a lamp, a light, like John is used to seeing from a Hebrew lamp. So whatever it is, it produces a light that he's seen many times, the type of light coming out of a Hebrew lamp. And whatever this thing is, it falls upon the third part of the rivers and upon the fountains of waters. Now, this thing falls on one third of the earth's surface because man's water supply consists of the rivers and the source of all water that comes through the hydrological cycle, which are the oceans and seas of the world. So I think it's safe to say that this falls on about a third part of the earth's surface, and it affects the rivers and the source of the rivers, which is the precipitation that falls on them after having been evaporated from the fountains of waters, which are the oceans and seas of the world. So we'll cover all this in great detail before I'm finished, and I'll make my proof. And the name of the star is called Wormwood. It's called Wormwood because of a particular thing that's mentioned as one of its characteristics, which we're going to cover next. Now, what I'm going to cover next is so simplistic that it amazed me that I have never run into a commentary published by anybody that caught it. It's absolutely simplistic. And it's absolutely positive proof. And yet I have never read a commentary that even mentioned it. If you take water, Kevin, and you put powder in it, that's strawberry powder, strawberry Kool-Aid. Now that powder is not a liquid, and that powder is not a vapor. The powder is a solid. If you take that solid, let's make it strawberry powder Kool-Aid, and your grandmother puts that in a container of water, what does the water turn into? Red stuff, strawberry Kool-Aid. So it turns into strawberry Kool-Aid. Do you know why it turns into strawberry Kool-Aid? Because it dissolves in water. Now look at this. Because this is so simple, it jumps out and bites you. I don't know why nobody ever even noticed it. But I'm an analyst. That's what I do. And a third part of the waters became wormwood. It means they became whatever wormwood is. And they turned into wormwood. Wormwood is a bitter, 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 bitter taste. And wormwood, in the time that this was written in 95 and 96 A.D., was used for medicinal purposes. They ground it up into powder. And when you took this powder, it was for stomach ailments. It did one of two things, and I'm not joking. It either cures you or it kills you. It had an extremely bitter taste. So all the writers in 95-96 A.D., they knew exactly what this did. But whatever this is, it has a bitter taste, like wormwood. But it's poisonous. So we're looking for something that's a solid, comes out of the heavens, that dissolves in water. It has to be poison, make the water poisonous, and it makes the water bitter. Now, you got three things to choose from. Is it a shooting star, a meteor, meteoroid, meteorite, or is it a fixed star in the heavens like Polaris, hundreds of thousands of light years away, or is it a comet? Well, shooting stars don't dissolve in water. Shooting stars, meteors, meteoroids, meteorites, are not poisonous. Neither are stars, and stars are much too far away to come in without having given an advance notice of thousands and thousands of years. So this is a comet. But we're going to go through and make concrete proof of why this has to be a comet. Now, why am I doing this? Well, you all asked me to do it on Wednesday night. That's the first reason. But the second reason is, whenever the rapture occurs, like next year, the year after, before 2008, after 2008, whenever it occurs, there are some things I can't tell you the time. I can estimate, guesstimate, approximate, suggest, tell you this is what I think, tell you this is what I believe, this is tell you what I'm convicted of. There's lots of things I can tell you about the timing, but it's speculation. It's fancy a fool if he said it wasn't. But the things I'm going to show you are not speculation, because they work and they're real. So the first reason I'm showing you this is because you asked me. But secondly, whenever it occurs, Brother Shipley, if you live long enough, if I live long enough, and Doc, if you live long enough, you're going to be here when it comes. And it would sure be helpful to know which one of the three it was. Because if you know what something is going to do before it does it, that takes a lot of the fear out of it. President Roosevelt, and I'm sure he got it from someone else, said, "We have nothing to fear but fear itself." And others have made statements that bear out the old saying that anything that is unknown generates fear. But the Bible makes it very clear what this is. And I'm going to deal with it point by point, line by line, verse by verse, and each one of these expressions, because there is no doubt what this is. There is a doubt if I'm right about the seventh trumpet. I don't think I'm wrong. But down inside where I live, I've been honest with you. I can't tell you the time, but I know it's the seventh trumpet. But I guarantee you this is going to happen, and I guarantee you it's going to be what I show you. And even if it isn't, what I'm showing you tells you what it does, and it does exactly what a comet would do. And a third angel sounded, and there fell a great star from heaven, burning as it were a lamp, and it fell upon the third part of the rivers and upon the fountains of water. And the name of the star is called Wormwood, and the third part of the waters became Wormwood, and many men died of the waters because they were made bitter. I won't finish this in one Wednesday night, but I'll be here next Wednesday night. Maybe I can finish it two Wednesday night. Now, this is what I have had to put up with for 27 years of going to missionary Baptist churches. Most of these were written by missionary Baptists. Most of them were written by missionary Baptist preachers. Am I putting them down? Nope, I am not. But these are direct quotes. And most of these commentaries were written by missionary Baptist preachers, published out of Texarkana. And look at the wide variety of opinions as to what this is. Wormwood was Attila the Hun. Some take this to be a political star, some eminent governor, and they apply it to Augustulus. Others take it to be an ecclesiastical star, some eminent person in the church. The star is the Pope. They get an idea, and they throw whatever their idea is, and then make it a symbol. Then you can make it pretty much whatever you want. Now, one of the missionary Baptist preachers who I dearly loved, when they first dropped the atomic bomb, within a year he came out, I believe, with his first book. And all of a sudden, everything in the book of Revelation took on atomic radiation. He says, it suggests that it might be poison from radiation, because waters which are exposed to radiation do become bitter. Number five, the star burst into dust so as to be scattered over many waters. Well, that's a pretty flat statement, and I do believe that's going to happen. But I think there's more detail than that. It is some person who claims authority and who becomes an apostate. Wormwood is his name. When the star explodes, it is scattered over one-third of the rivers. Some of these I don't disagree with. They just don't provide you with a whole lot of explanation. This will doubtless be another one of the smaller heavenly bodies known as asteroids. This guy says it's a meteorite. A shooting star, when it's out in space, is called a meteoroid. When it enters the Earth's atmosphere and is in the Earth's atmosphere, it is called a meteor. If it doesn't burn up to a crisp before it hits the surface, it's called a meteorite. But it's a shooting star, and that's what I'll refer to from here on out. This is not a shooting star. Here is a star, smaller evidently than the burning mountain. Lord have mercy. Smaller than the burning mountain, and it falls on a third of the ocean? Well, I don't know, maybe not. The star seems to be a heavenly body or a mass from outer space, understandably burning as it enters the atmosphere of the Earth. Well, we'll get to that. Here's another meteoric phenomenon. He says it's a shooting star. It's not. The third part of all drinking water is poisoned by a huge noxious torch-like meteor shooting down from the sky. That isn't true. And as I go through here, I'll prove why that cannot possibly be true. I happen to agree with number 13. Here's another marvelous meteoric phenomena, perhaps a comet striking the Earth from the apocalypse by seas. Commentators make many statements without any reasoning for those statements ever being given. I contend that what wormwood is can only be determined by taking John's inspired description, then comparing it with what the one who inspired has made in his creation. I contend that most of the judgments upon mankind are manipulations by God of the things he has already created in his universe. The book of Revelation, in a large part, is a horrifying description of God using the things he has previously created under the earth, on the earth, and above the earth to shake creation to its very foundation. Now, how much benefit are you going to get out of this? If I'm right, a bunch. And if I'm wrong, you really haven't been hurt, because God says this is going to happen. And I guarantee you, by the time I'm finished, you'll remember what the verse of Scripture says. And so when it does show up, it'll help you. The four trumpets of Revelation. We're in number 3. And the third angel sounded, there fell a great star, a star from heaven, burning as it were a lamp, like a Hebrew lamp. And it fell upon the third part of the rivers, upon the third part of the surface of the earth, and upon the fountains of waters. The source of all water on land is precipitation that comes up by evaporation from the oceans and then condensation on land. And the third part of the waters became wormwood. Whatever this is, it has to dissolve in water, or the water couldn't become wormwood. And when it dissolves in water, it makes the water poisonous, because men die of the waters, and they have a bitter taste, which different types of poisonous substances usually have. Now, this is what most commentaries will tell you it is. That kind of looks like Giles McVeigh. But this, most commentaries will tell you that this is what it is. They'll tell you it's a meteoroid, meteorite, or meteor. All three of those are the same thing. Shooting star. Shooting star is a meteor, meteoroid, meteorite. It just depends on which stage it's passing through. Out in space, it's a meteoroid. When it is in the Earth's atmosphere and hadn't hit the Earth, it's a meteor. 99% of them burn up before they ever hit the Earth, and you don't even see fragments from them. They just come around as dust. If it happens to be large enough to hit the Earth's surface, as this one did, then it's called a meteorite. And this is a solid object. Now, meteorites have three different compositions. And this is why I know it's not a meteorite, based on what the Scripture says. There are three types of meteorites here. On the right is a stony iron. That's here. It's nickel, it's network of nickel iron alloy filled with a stone called olivine. This one here is a solid stone, terrestrial rock. This type here is mostly nickel iron alloy. All three of these are solids. That's what meteoroids, that's what shooting stars are made of. There has never been, in all of history, any recorded evidence or any reports that anyone, any animal, any creature ever died of meteoric poisoning when one of these fell into a water hole. They've fallen into stock ponds, they've fallen into lakes, they've fallen into rivers, they've fallen into all sorts of little ponds. They do not poison the water. Nickel doesn't poison water, iron doesn't poison water, and stone doesn't poison water. Some types may make a bitter taste, but they sure don't poison the water. That's not a theory. That's an absolute, irrefutable fact. The elements of a meteor, meteoroid, meteorite, a shooting star, couldn't possibly do the water. Now, when meteors come down, most of them dissolve out here. And sometimes they make craters in the earth, and if they happen to make it to the surface, they're called meteorites. This was the huge meteorite that was located out in Arizona. It's a huge crater. There's one larger than that up in Canada. I think it's in Quebec, but I'm not sure. But there's one larger than that on the earth. And when a meteor comes down and makes one of these large caverns, it has a long flickering tail on it. Not a meteor, but a, well, I'll get to that later on. Let's talk about something here that I might as well talk about this now. A Hebrew lamp, this thing burns like a lamp, looked like a little Aladdin's lamp that you rub and get your wishes. Inside it, it had olive oil. It had flax ran down into it for a wick, and they lit the flax. Because the olive oil they used was not purified or refined, whenever you lit it, it would burn, and it would put off a long white tail. But a lamp would burn for days or weeks. A lamp burned for a long time, depending on its size and the amount of olive oil you had in it. And John uses the figure of a lamppost. Now, there is a word for torch, but he didn't use torch. He used the one for a Hebrew lamp. And John had been in many Hebrew homes, and he had seen these over and over and over again. He would always see this flame, a ball of flame, coming out of the end of the Aladdin's lamp in a long white tail because the olive oil was not purified. How long would it burn? Days, maybe even weeks. This says it burned as a light, like a light. A light keeps burning and burning and burning and burning and burning. But this thing, if it were a meteor, meteoroid, meteorite, a shooting star, what happens is you see a shooting star, and if you can make a wish, boom, before it disappears, it's supposed to come true. So this thing didn't burn like a lamp. It just went, came, disappeared, and pew. But the one John described burned like a lamp. This one doesn't. So it is not a shooting star. This is a Hebrew lamp that I talked about. This is a Herodian lamp, which would have been in use at the time of Jesus and when John wrote the book of Revelation later. You put the olive oil in here. You run a piece of flax down through here into the olive oil. Then you ignited it here, and it would burn for all day, and sometimes days, and sometimes even possibly a week. So John was looking at describing a light that burned like a lamp when he looked up in heaven and saw it. And meteoroids, they just go and they go out. Now this thing is very interesting because he says burning as it were a lamp. And a third angel sounded, and there fell a great star from heaven. I'm showing you why it isn't a shooting star and why it has to be a comet, burning as it were a lamp. Well, how does a comet appear in the heavens? It looks like a light on the front of it, a huge ball or light, just like you see on a Hebrew lamp. And it's got a long white tail behind it. And if you saw it up in the heavens, like Halley's Comet, you could see it for months as it passed around the earth. And so the description fits a comet much better than a shooting star. Now, if this is the Word of God, and if God made all things in His universe, then whatever this is, God knows how to describe it. He knows how to have John describe it. And the description fits a comet. It does not fit a shooting star. And it fell upon the third part of the rivers and upon the fountains of water. See this hole here? That wasn't a third of the earth at all. It was a very small area. If this were made of solid nickel, iron, and stone, and it fell upon a third part of the earth's surface, where's your earthquake? Don't tell me a solid object like a meteorite striking the earth, one third of it, wouldn't produce an earthquake. Man, it would produce an earthquake in excess of 9+ on the Richter scale. So there's no earthquake. You say, well, John just didn't report it. Listen, John reported earthquakes constantly. And I think he would have reported this magnitude of an earthquake. Now, this is what John saw. It has a light on one end, a ball of light, just like a Hebrew lamp. And as it goes through the heavens, it keeps on putting out that long flickering tail, just like a Hebrew lamp does from impure olive oil. And the same word is used here. Raging waves of the sea, foaming out their own shape. Wandering stars, the stairs, to whom is reserved the blackness of darkness forever. They come into our universe from a comet cloud on the outer fringe of it. We see them go around, we see their brilliance, and then we see them disappear into the darkness of space forever. So what John saw fits the description of a comet perfectly. This is a snow-covered Antarctica at the South Pole. This is a picture of a comet passing over the South Pole on its way around the Earth. How many comets did God make? Well, God made a bunch. Right here is the sun. The sun setting right here. This is called an Oort cloud. O-O-R-T, an Oort cloud. It's an Oort cloud of comets. Every one of these little tiny specks is a comet. As you can see, some of them are large, some of them are very small. In all this maze, there are billions and billions of them. Somewhere out there in all that maze, on the other side of Jupiter, the Earth is right in here. This little place in here, this little place I've colored in yellow, that's where the Earth's solar system is. This is where all the planets are. All the planets, Earth, all the way out to Pluto and past, right here in this little yellow area. The Oort cloud begins out here. God's going to pick one of these comets out. I don't know which one, but it'll be just the right size, and He'll pick it out at just the right time, and it'll come in to make its orbit around the Earth, just like they all have. But this time, it's going to hit the Earth. It's not going to go around it. And when it comes down, it's going to do something that's very interesting. This Oort cloud is way out here beyond our solar system. This is the Oort cloud. This is what Halley's Comet has been doing in about a 76-year arc for a long time. It always comes in, goes around the sun, between the sun and the earth usually, and we get to see a beautiful exposition of Halley's Comet. This is a huge comet. This one is in Alabama. That's down there near Mississippi, and that's down there in this area here. And they're made of nickel, they're made of iron, they're made of stone, and they make big holes on the earth. It fell upon a third part of the rivers, upon the fountains of water. If that thing hit the earth, a third the size of the earth, it would go into the earth, and you would have the end of all life on this earth. But this thing is a comet. This is a comet nucleus. The nucleus of a comet is composed of solidified gases that have merged into a gigantic maze of ice. Comets have been correctly labeled as dirty, great dirty ice balls. The dirty portion shown above as black blotches consist of solid space debris embedded in the outer veneer of the ice, pieces of nickel, iron, and stone, which became embedded upon contact with a comet as it moved through outer space. Most of a comet is solid ice. You've studied in class about when meteors, shooting stars, big old chunks of rock come into the Earth's atmosphere. You've been taught about how they generate heat. And when they generate that heat, they just turn red hot, then white hot, and then they start to flake off. You know, that's the way the astronauts are. That's why they have that shield on there, so it'll flake off. And some people just burn up because of the heat generated. What happens to ice if you leave it outside your refrigerator for a couple of days? It melts, doesn't it? Ice doesn't burn, does it? It melts. It vaporizes. What a comet would do if it entered the Earth's atmosphere, it would vaporize. And so it never would strike the Earth as a solid object, but it would strike the Earth as a great, big, huge, heavy cloud of poisonous vapor. So we're going to be talking about that. And next week I'll be talking about what a comet's made of and how that fits in with it. And we'll be talking about when this comet comes in and what it does when it comes in. Now, why should you come back next Wednesday night? Reason number one, because you love the Lord. Now, don't you think that's the best reason, Kevin? What about you? He said, well, it's a pretty good nap time. So for him, it's a pretty good reason. He gets a nice nap on Wednesday night. And he does. He needs the rest.